Welcome to Talaterra, a podcast about freelance educators working in natural resource fields and environmental education. Who are these educators? What do they do? Join me, and let's find out together. This is your host, Tanya Marion. Today, my guest is Mindy Leithheit. Mindy is a nature artist and the author and illustrator of two books, The Art of Botanical and Bird Illustration and Mother Monarch, a children's book about the life cycle of the monarch butterfly. Her work is featured in the book Today's Botanical Artists and on a set of oracle cards about nature's wisdom. Mindy is also an award-winning artist. Her series titled Symbiosis received a Silver Gilt Medal from the Royal Horticultural Society. How did Mindy develop her freelance career? How does she help her students tell their story? Why does she lead trips to Costa Rica? Let's find out. Thank you, Mindy, for stopping by to talk about your Costa Rica trip and your work as well. If you wouldn't mind introducing yourself to listeners.
Hi, my name is Mindy Leithheit, and I am a nature artist by trade. I absolutely love drawing the beauty of nature, and I enjoy getting outside as often as I can and discovering everything I can that's under rock, under stream, anywhere. I love bugs. I love animals. I love and all of the relationship of how they interconnect with one another is what I try to bring to life on my paper.
What is your earliest memory of enjoying nature?
I think probably being sent away to summer camp. I was very fortunate. I think at the age of maybe it was 8, my parents sent me to a YMCA camp in the Poconos. And it was a wonderful experience because everything was outside. We had different challenges, sort of like Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts. So I remember picking blueberries all around the lake and having them, and then we had to build our own oven, and then we had to have a one-match fire club, and then we had to make our own like blueberry scones inside the oven that we had made. And, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, I just felt like I just couldn't get enough. And I went through the whole camp program and worked as a camp counselor and then was the arts and crafts director later on. So I think that just being ensconced in nature like that and having that opportunity every summer, I ended up spending like as much as I possibly could there. I became a certified canoe through the Red Cross. And I also got my water safety instructor to teach people and to teach lifeguards. So I really got a wonderful experience as a young person, learning about nature and being at it and having respect for it.
When did you realize that nature was important to you?
I think that I was always really super interested in it. And I think it's something that's just sort of grown up with me. So I don't know that there was an aha moment where I just all of a sudden discovered, oh, this is the most important thing. I think more as an adult and as a professional artist with climate change and the things that are, you know, happening with a lot of animals, extinction and trouble with all of that. I all of a sudden, I feel like now there's a way that I can use my art as a voice because I'm more consciously aware of how fragile nature is and how important it is. So I think that when I draw something, I'm trying to impart the wonder that I had as a child into what it is that I'm doing to hope to inspire people to look at things as like monoculture. That's where Mother Monarch came from, that a monoculture is really not what we're looking for. Insects chewing on leaves is a good thing. It's not something you run out with a can of Raid and start eradicating everything. So I think that, you know, more and more as I get older, and things become more fragile and the time frame seems more of an urgency, I have taken a lot more care in how I present my work and who I try to reach with it. So I'm actually looking more at it as an audience for it. But it's always been there. I think it's just that first, I think the first pet I ever had was an ant. I came home, I had it in a jar, and I said to my mom, look at this. I found him. He's my friend. So, you know, I think that there was always sort of maybe a wood sprite, you know, inside me that was always out there looking under anything I could find that would be fun and curious.
I first learned of your work and learned about you in the early 2000s. And I purchased your instructional texts about botanical illustration and working in graphite. And also, I sent you a question many, many, many years ago about gouache. And you were so kind and responded. And it was a very helpful, a very kind answer. I've only known you as a freelance artist and educator. Have you always been working freelance?
Yes. Yes, I have. It's interesting. From my college days, I actually was a textile designer, and I don't know if you were aware of that, and maybe why my career didn't appear until just recently, or you know, in the 2000s. I went to school for art, but I was actually a hand weaver and a spinner. So I used to run after sheep. And I used to dye spun. I did a lot of natural dyeing. So I was introduced to plants at that point in time also. And I did that for many, many years. And then I found that the market was changing. My back was bothering me. I was weaving like 24 yards a day, which is a lot of fabric. I was a production hand weaver. And I really felt that I wanted to change my career. So that was when I thought that nature was really important, and I went to the New York Botanical Gardens, where I actually was always a freelance person there. So when I left college, I had my own business in doing craft shows and marketing. I had a wholesale and a retail business where I traveled around the country with my hand-woven clothing, and then I transitioned myself by going to school and working part-time. Then I transitioned myself again by working for my competitor, doing handwoven production work for her while I was getting a freelance career in illustration, you know, going that way. So I've overlapped things, and I taught at the New York Botanical Gardens, and I ran their program for 15 years, but it was always a freelance position. So I think at times for me, there might have been panic. Like, oh my God, I need to get a real job. But at the same time, it was like, oh no, I can't get a real job. So I kind of became a jack of all trades. I do a lot of different things. I think, you know, some people might call it ADD, but I actually say that I just love what I do and I'm always curious about things. So I bounce around a lot. And I think that it's my stick-to-itiveness to say, you know what, I want to be able to do what I want to do. And I want to be able to move in whatever direction I feel is important to me at the time, that having a full-time job, although it would give me benefits, it would give me retirement, there'd be security, almost seems like a form of bondage that I've never really been willing to sit down and do. So I'm still freelancing. So I guess I'm a survivor. And even though there have been lots of mistakes probably in marketing or advertising myself or honing my skills to get freelance work, I've always been able to scramble around and make a living.
How did you figure out your path? How did you smooth your path over the years?
Well, I would say that I don't know if it's been smooth. I think there might, you know, I'm looking under a rock and then I stumble over it and then I fall down and then I pick the rock up and I find something new underneath it and I keep going. So it's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, I have right now I'm an adjunct professor at the University of Florida, and I have students that will come to me and say, "I want to be an illustrator. I want to be just like you when I grow up." You know, and I was like, "Well, that's great, But, and I think if I had to do it all over again, and what I tell my students now is that you need to have marketing skills. You are an entrepreneur and you need to have that. You can't just say, I'm going to sit down and paint these beautiful things and someone is going to, it's not the theory of if you build it, they will come. You know, if I paint it, I will make money. And I didn't really have that kind of business type background. And I would say that after a while, it dawned on me that I was a business person and that I had no idea what business was all about. And so I think that if there's the weakest part of what I have done in my career is that I did not ever have like business plans or clear things. And so I've found my way as I've gone along and I still have a lot to learn. So it's been challenging, but as I said, I hyperventilated the thought of being put like in a 9-to-5.
How do you teach your students to tell their stories? How do you
mean
encourage
in the
them?
Illustrations or
in their work and their own personal story? How do you teach them to tell their stories and their story about themselves, the story about their work to prospective clients or people interested in their work?
Okay, well, the first thing that I teach my students is that. Particularly because the course that I'm teaching at UF is Introduction to Scientific Illustration. So the main theme of the entire class is that they need to pick a target audience. Before they draw anything, they need to make a decision as to who they are drawing for. And I think that that is one of the most important things. So for instance, with Mother Monarch, I was dealing with ages maybe 4 to 7 years old. And I had to be careful about the language that I used. And also the images are different from a lot of my other work. They're big, they're bold, there's a lot of color in it. Everything is cheerful and happy. And that's because that's my audience. If I were to be more scientific, I mean, I've drawn the monarch butterfly, I think, more than I ever care to draw it again. But at the same time, each time I've done it, there's been a different audience that I've been drawing for. So when I give an assignment or I'm working with a student or even an online student that wants to pursue this more in a career orientation, I think that the most important thing is that you're illustrating for someone and it's not just your mother or your friend or a gift. And so imparting and knowing exactly what it is, who you're talking to is exactly what you need to do. So if you're working, like right now I'm doing invasive aquatic plants for UF and I'm working with a botanist and I don't just get to pick this plant up and do the pretty parts of it. I have to find out exactly what the botanist is looking for. And I actually go to the botanist first and say, what is it that you want? Please outline it so that I don't spend a lot of time doing unnecessary work. So, you know, I think that that is a really valuable lesson. And I actually learned it the hard way by doing things just the way I thought they should be. And then realizing that, you know, sometimes in the field that I work in, your self-expression is not welcomed. I don't really mean that in a negative way, but you know, it's like that's not what they're paying you for, you know? And so like Mother Monarch was completely on my own. It was my own story. I was the author and the illustrator and I could be flamboyant and I could have fun. And I used all different kinds of techniques and boom, it came out in the vision that I had it in. When I've done other projects, I feel sometimes like part of my personality does not come through because it's not about me. It's about the audience that is learning from it. So I think just in terms of teaching people, I think it's really important for them to kind of have a clear idea of who they're working for, who they're trying to reach. And it's really interesting. And I take their skill levels of what they can and cannot do. And I try to help them. So I mean, like, for instance, I had a student who was working with autistic adults and his drawing skills were not great, but we had an insect illustration project that we needed to do. And he came to me and he talked to me about it. And he ended up doing a coloring book for autistic adults. And it was in black and white, and he, and they were nice and big and bold, and they were, you know, and they, he really did a beautiful job on it. Anatomically, he was correct so that they were understanding the basic parts of the butterflies. He had a different variety. And so I thought that that was terrific. You know, I also had another student who came to me who wanted to do a project for, at first he wanted to do a portrait of his dog who was a pit bull. And I described to him that that is not, that's not scientific. That's like, you know, that's portraiture. And so what we did was we took that project and we changed it into something different. He worked for pit bull advocacy because he feels like pit bulls get a really bad rap. And he did some scientific illustrations using his dog to show the difference between pit bulls and terriers and that there's a big difference. And it ended up actually being the images that he used, that he created, were actually then used as a logo for a rock band that then ended up being used for pit bull rescue. So it was so cool because I was able to help him to steer his passions into exactly what it was that he was trying to communicate. The love that he has for his dog and the fact that he was really upset that pit bulls just get this really bad rap and that a lot of them are being euthanized. He wanted to help, but at first it started out with a portrait of his dog. So, you know, I think that I have a good sense of being able to extrapolate feelings and sensitivities from people and getting them to be able to give a message that is going to resonate out there and not just, here's my pit bull. My pit bull, you know, isn't he cute? That just doesn't, it doesn't really, you know, okay, well, no, I don't think pit bulls are cute or I'm still prejudiced against them. So, but he really did a great job. And so it was wonderful.
Oh yeah, that does sound really wonderful and exciting for the students.
Absolutely.
They came in with that type of a vision, doing something purposeful, right, and meaningful.
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly.
That's great. Is the science illustration class, is that part of the regular curriculum or is that taught as an extension course?
It's an extension course. It's for non-art majors. And that's actually what's really interesting because the art majors have to actually go to the art department and they have to petition to get into my class. And so I have a lot of veterinarian, wildlife conservation, dental, pre-med, and some of them have drawing skills and some of them don't. So one of the things that I wanted was for everyone to be able to participate and do the best they could do regardless of their drawing skills. So, you know, if your drawings, like I was saying that the one guy was working with the autistic adults, his drawing skills were really not that great. And he developed and got much better in the class. But I didn't want him to feel that, you know, well, I'm not going to pass the class because, or I'm not going to get a good enough grade because someone else who's sitting next to me has better drawing skills. So that's where I really came up with the idea of targeting an audience. And, you know, so part of their grade when I actually issue a grade to someone is how well they have reached their audience through their illustration. So for instance, if that student had given me a little essay that said that it was for his dissertation for his entomology textbook on a college level, he would have gotten a very poor grade because it would not have been accurate enough. So I think that there's a lot of leeway in terms of, I encourage them to be creative. I encourage them to think outside of the box because I think that there's a level for everybody. And there, it's not just, well, I'm not good enough. You're always good enough and your ideas are always appreciated and they'll always be heard as long as you get them out there.
That's exciting. I'm sure lots of people love to have you as a teacher.
It's fun. I think that you can see from my voice, I really love teaching. My dad was a school teacher and he didn't want me to be an artist. He wanted me to be a school teacher and I didn't want to be a school teacher. I wanted to be an artist, but now I'm both.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not necessarily, you know, like Costa Rica is a great classroom.
Yes.
You know, I actually use that in some of my advertising is, you know, come to Costa Rica with me where the rainforest is your classroom, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. because getting out there and immersing yourself outside is great. A lot of the things that we do at the university is through specimens. and reconstruction, and you know, things are dead, but you know, it's still, there's collections and there's still a lot of learning that's and techniques that are taught in that class, but we don't actually get outside as much. I did take an undergraduate group of students to Costa Rica for an undergraduate course, and that was wonderful. It was great to be able to take them out into the jungle, and they were just bouncing off the trees. they had a great time.
And also, as long as I've been following your work, you've been going to Costa Rica. So how many years have you led an art tour in Costa Rica?
I would say that it's at least 25.
Wow.
I know that as when I was in transition from being hand weaver to illustrator, I went to Costa Rica on my own for the first time, and I absolutely fell in love with it. And I was trying to find ways of getting back there. And there were a bunch of organizations that I had offered my services to in terms of drawing and coming and doing some promotional work for them just to build up a portfolio. And also because I was passionate about it and I wanted to go back. In teaching at the New York Botanical Gardens, I brought that enthusiasm into the classroom and was able to show my students, you know, the work that I had been doing. And the next thing I knew, they were saying to me, well, when are you going to take us? And I was like, oh, how about next year? You know, and that's kind of how it came, that my students actually prodded me. They're mostly, I would say, from the ages of 35 to 80 years old. People who have all, it's an adult education certification. So these are people that have already been through college, and they're mostly women, but they've got college educations and they're back and they're serious artists, and they really wanted to come with me. And I was able to find Holbrook Travel, which is actually here in Gainesville, which is even more remarkable because it was serendipity that happened. I did not know that the place that I love the most, which is Selva Verde, was owned by Holbrook Travel. And I had been going there for a long time. And then I moved to Gainesville. And then I found out that Holbrook Travel was in Gainesville. It was just very weird. And other people that I had worked with in Costa Rica had worked for Holbrook. It all just sort of seemed like I was where I was supposed to be. And so I would say that it's been about 25 years that I've been leading the tours in Costa Rica.
Wow. And your tours now, are they still open to serious artists, or are they open to everyone?
They're basically open to everyone. I do get questions, you know, I'm going to wait until I'm good enough, mm-hmm. you know, and I say to them, look, if you have a desire and an interest to be with people who are like-minded, who are passionate about nature and are passionate about art and photography and learning and exploring, it doesn't matter whether you're a beginner or you're a seasoned professional. I have both that come on my tours. I even sometimes have spouses or friends or partners that come that are birders or just photographers because they want to be in this, you know, in the program. And it's a wonderful program because we have a naturalist guide that I've been working with for a very long time. And it's wonderful because we're not speeding through things. We go at a snail's pace, and there's just so much to see and learn that I just keep going back. I've been to other places, but it's my favorite place because I always discover things that are new. And I'm always working on projects that I have little bits and pieces that I need to keep researching before I actually do a final piece. So it might take me, oh, I don't know, 3 or 4 years before all of the bits come together and all of a sudden, wow, you know, I've got enough to do a whole painting on this and then go for it. A lot of my symbiosis butterfly life cycles were very much like that. You know, it took me a while to get all of the parts together because you can't, there are different seasons, there's different times, there's different, you know, you don't see it all in one at one time. You don't see the growth cycle all at once.
I've watched your website evolve over the years, and you've always had really wonderful pictures and descriptions from the Costa Rica trip. Your website today really does a really beautiful job of walking someone through all 10 days.
You know, I did a huge revamp this year, mm-hmm. a huge revamp, which I'm really, really happy with. I took my own advice and I took some marketing classes on how to market better. And so they have you building an avatar and they have you getting your avatar to imagine themselves in this setting and all this kind of stuff. And at first I thought, oh, this is too Disney for me. This is just so bizarre. But you know, it was really interesting because as soon as I uploaded it, I started getting all of these people giving me rave compliments about it. And I feel like it's so much better than it was before because it really, I'm very happy with it.
You tell your story very well.
Yeah, as I said, like this was basically through this course that I had taken. It's called Wanderlust Entrepreneur, and they specialize in helping people market retreats.
Oh, wonderful!
Yeah, and so they're doing great guns. They're mostly yoga people, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, like meditation and self-help kind of things. But it was really interesting for me, and so I really just basically changed everything in terms of how I presented it. I think that the thing that was most interesting for me was I don't like to sell. It's uncomfortable for me I get kind of panicky when I feel like I have to try to sell something because I feel pushy and it just doesn't feel good. But they taught me that the most important thing that I could do is teach. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I can do that. I can do that. And there's like, well, when you're teaching, you're selling. And I was like, I am. And it's like, you're basically telling people what they're going to gain from being with you and learning, you know, and all of that. So it was really interesting how I was able to tell the story. It took a while, but you know, for instance, on day two, it says here, wake up to the sounds of tropical birds. As you look out onto the garden from your veranda, the morning light dances the lush colors of tropical paradise. And then it says, get acquainted with your art supplies and camera equipment as we head out to the Toucan Rescue Ranch. Meet and spend time with Leslie Howell, owner and founder of this special location. Witness the process of caring for injured birds and mammals as they are nurtured for release back into the wild. Spend time with your favorite owl, sloth, toucan, or monkey and capture their behavior and essence on paper and camera. You know, so it was like I had to paint a picture with words.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I just basically had an itinerary. Day one, we go to the Toucan Rescue Ranch, and it's a place where they rehabilitate and they release rainforest animals. You know, and I didn't realize how sterile and how unappealing it sounded until I took this course. And so it was really interesting because now I can say like, oh, I want to go on that trip. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's, yeah. And that really, I was really very, very happy with the advice that they gave me. And I'm happy to say that the trip is almost full. I do have a couple more spots left, but I think that it's really important to let the other point that was made to me in this course is that the World Wide Web is worldwide. So you have this opportunity to make an impression with people, to reach out to them, to have them join you. But if you don't give them a good impression or you don't give them enough information or the kind of information that you really need to give them, why would they go with you? They don't know you. Why are they just going to plunk down a bunch of money and come? And it was very interesting to me because I teach online and I have Facebook groups that are private for my students when I'm teaching online. And I actually had two women who found me on Facebook, took courses with me, and then came to Costa Rica, and they were from Turkey. I was wow. Blown away. I was like, you're from where? I mean, they came all the way from Turkey. It was amazing to me that that, you know, they said, well, you know, we got to know you online, mm-hmm. and we felt that this was a destination where we could really, we felt akin to, we wanted to explore it. And you were the person that we felt would be the best person to explore it with. Because, you know, I knew the country and my enthusiasm and the fact that, you know, I pay special attention to people. I care about what level they're at. I try to make sure that, you know, nobody gets lost in the shuffle. And it's, you know, it feels so good. When I come back from a trip, I'm like, whoa, that was awesome. These people are great. Mm-hmm. And then I get to see they post things that they've done. And also, that was another big project. I thought that I would send you some information. One of my ladies who came on a trip with me, she's been on the trip with me twice. She is a professional illustrator. She's a medical and natural science illustrator. She did a project called Duets, and it's this, and she just published her own little book. So I don't know. Can you see?
Yeah, me? I saw. I just ordered that. That's Vicky.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I met Vicky at a Guild of Natural Science Illustrators conference, yeah. in Santa Cruz, I think it was. Santa Cruz.
Yeah, yeah. She's amazing. Mm-hmm. And she's been on my trip twice. And so some of the illustrations that are in the book are from work that she did. And, you know, that's where I just did a blog post about her and you know, sort of was just showing off her book and what she's done, because I think that, you know, not everybody is at the same level as Vicky, but I think a lot of people, like, for instance, I had another student who was online who took classes with me, and she put together a little pen and ink coloring book of native plants for children in her local elementary school. And I was like, that is just so cool that, you know, she didn't go hardbound. She doesn't have super computer skills. She's not, you know, but she did this darling book. I mean, it's just like amazing little ecosystems of things that are around in her local neighborhood. And so I think that, you know, whether you travel to Costa Rica or whether you work full time as a professional or you do it on the side or you do it, you know, whenever, there's always something that you feel there's a personal thing that she can bring to it. And that's what I try to give birth to. I want people to be able to take their ideas and actually physically, you know, I have a book, or I did this thing, or I made it on the cover of a rock group, you know. That to me is like so exciting to be able to help people get there, because I think that a lot of times they're doubtful. They don't think that they can do it. They're a little, you know, technology scary. There's that self-doubt, or they're procrastinating because they just don't know the steps. And I feel like I'm really helpful that way in getting them to finish a project. I didn't have a lot to do with Vicky because she's a high motivator. She did it all on her own, although she, you know, being with her was great, and seeing her paintings. And we've actually painted similar things from being in similar locations together. And no matter, you always bring your own personal, you know, vision to your work, which I think is great. And I love Vicky's visions.
How has a 10-day experience changed the participants on your tour?
I think that they come back energized. I think they come back more confident. I think they come back bursting with ideas. I think that that's one of the things. Sometimes, you know, you go on a workshop, or you go to a place, like you'll go to Italy. I've done some different locations, and you get to see some culture and you get to see some things, but you're mostly in a classroom setting or an area setting where you're painting, unless you're doing plein air. But with mine, we take you to all these different locations where you're actually ensconced and learning simultaneously while you're sketching. I teach people how to do field notes. And this all culminated from me going to Costa Rica. When I first started, I had a full portfolio with 30 inch by 22 sheets of watercolor paper. And I felt like, okay, I'm here for 10 days. I have to do 10 really awesome paintings. And, you know, all that pressure. And then I'd come home and I'd be like, And it was before digital photography. So I never knew what was on my film was on my camera. And, you know, it was just a mess. You know, everything. I mean, I was doing it, but I didn't. And now it's like, it's all about getting your research. So what happens is that the participants come home with so much stuff that they've accumulated in terms of experience, knowledge, sketches, color notes, photography, all this kind of stuff, that it kind of whirlwinds them into their own studio where they can start creating all kinds of things. I've got people making gift wrap paper and product designs, and Vicky's doing a book, and somebody's doing a coloring book, and somebody's doing a entering exhibitions. So I think that it's tailored to your own personal vision. So it's not like, okay, everybody's going to come home. It's the one thing I like hate about these paint and sip parties where everybody comes home the same exact canvas. It drives me crazy. It's really personalized. And I think that that is partly the charm of this, is that Costa Rica is conducive to this. The location is conducive to it. And I'm always constantly, and I actually have one student who, one woman who has been on my trip 8 years in a row. She just can't get enough, and I can't get enough, so I continue to go because, as I said, it's cumulative, and I just always find that there's a lot of energy that comes from it, as well as physical skills, new all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. What type of change do you want to make through your tours?
I want to see people become more confident and individualized in their art. As I said, like I just sort of touched on the fact that, you know, there's a lot of these, you go to a workshop and someone gives you a photograph and you copy the photograph. And I find that you're not really learning. I feel that by working from someone else's photograph, certainly doesn't give you any kind of experience. And you're not really learning, and you don't really know what you're looking at. And I'm not saying that photorealism is wrong, but it's different. And I feel that when someone gets out and actually experiences something, their perspective is what takes them into becoming their own artist. And I am more interested in people becoming their own artist than a carbon copy of something else or of myself or whatever. I try to offer many, I paint in gouache, I paint in watercolor, I do pastels, I do a number of things. And it depends on the mood or the subject or my inspiration at the moment of what it is that I want to do. And so I kind of offer all of these different options so that people can channel and find what makes them happy. You know, I don't ever feel that it's right to say to someone, this is the only way to do it. It's like, you know, your parenting, do it because I said so. You know, I'm your father, you know, and I said so. That's not me, you know. It's like, well, let's experiment and see what happens. Oh, that didn't work. Okay. What didn't you like? What did you like? Finding the positives and the negatives and having them move forward. So I think also developing and moving them in a positive direction that gets them really excited and passionate so that they have confidence that they don't have to, they don't have to be with me 24/7. They have the skills. I've given them enough skills that I could be an empty nester. They can go and fly because you can do it.
How has the success of your tour to Costa Rica changed how you think about science communication or art or cultural and heritage interpretation? You have a really nice mix of all of these elements in your tour. You work with local guides, local naturalists. You go to preserves and different conservation areas.
I think that the awareness, I don't, like, for instance, the Toucan Rescue Ranch, which is one of my favorite places to go to, there's a very big struggle. And also there's some new places that I'm going to be going to. For sustainability, there's a pineapple plantation that we're going to this year, which is new for me. And it's a local group of farmers that are organically and sustainably growing pineapples. And I think that part of bringing people where, you know, the pineapple just appears in the supermarket and we don't have any idea really how it's processed or how it's grown or what impact it's having on the environment. And I really enjoy enlightening people. People will say that, for instance, like with the Toucan Rescue Ranch, well, why aren't these animals being released? It's not that simple. It's not that simple that, you know, like for instance, they have to make sometimes very, very difficult decisions about an animal's future. There was a sloth that was there that actually had been burned in a wire, and part of the face was badly burned, and they were doing stem cell research and it was working. And also that sloth had to have one of its arms removed. So climbing and being arboreal, that was a major issue. That sloth made a recovery and was reintroduced back into the wild with a radio collar, and they monitor it. There are other animals there, like for instance, some hawks that have lost a wing and they've become a permanent resident. And I think that by seeing it's not a zoo, this is a working, let's get in here, let's hear the stories, let's find out, you know, what we can do as artists and conservationists to propel things forward, understanding the science aspect of it from, you know, like they're doing stem cell research on this sloth's face. And I mean, we could actually see the bone, the part of the skull was open and you could see where the skin was growing back. You know, that's not something that you like get to see every day. And I it's a shame that we actually are seeing it because it's a tragedy, but it shows the impact that man has in a negative way and in a positive way. So I think that there's a lot of things that we're just not privy to on the Nat Geo channel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you do see that kind of stuff, but you're not seeing it up close and personal. And you're not also by bringing them there, they're contributing financially to these places, because part of the money that's going to it is that each place has like a fee that we go to, and that fee helps to support whatever it is that they're doing. So I very carefully have picked things out that are conservation and sustainable so that I am bringing the tourists could ruin a place. You know, I know that I took people to the Galapagos and it was interesting because it's changed in terms of how many people they're allowing and how, you know, is it ruining the ecosystem and all that kind of stuff. So that's very fragile also. So I'm very conscientious about that.
Can you give a general background about your tour for listeners? It doesn't have to be an itinerary, your day by day, but when someone asks you about your tour or when you present information about a new tour that's launching, what do you say?
I say that it's an opportunity to journey or travel with like-minded people into parts that are rarely seen by the general public. It's an opportunity to draw, photograph, immerse, and research, accumulate all kinds of information. And we focus on plants, we focus on insects, we focus on mammals. I really haven't done much with marine life, but it's mostly animals, insects, and plants of the rainforest in Costa Rica. And so each day is the itinerary of a general itinerary. In the morning, there's usually, there's a lot of birding. I didn't realize I was a birder until a couple of years ago. Now I've decided I'm a birder. I don't use binoculars. I use my camera. But I just did this big project with Patricia, and it's all birds. So, and my book came out that has birds in it. And so all of a sudden I guess I'm a bird artist. I didn't realize it snuck up on me, but you know, so it would start out like with an early morning bird walk. And then, we would go to a location, which could be the pineapple plantation, or there's a place where we go to La Paz Rainforest Waterfall Gardens. And then there's actually a tour with a guide, and we spend maybe 2 to 3 hours walking around, taking sketches, taking photographs. And then usually in the afternoon, there's personal instruction where people can sit down and work on projects that they want. People like for me to demonstrate. So I usually try to demonstrate, get demonstrations prepared before I go. But I will do an impromptu every once in a while if I can. But I find that there's just not enough time. There's just so much to do and there's just not enough time to get it all in. So, you know, I'll do watercolor demonstrations and I work in gouache when I do fur. So if we're sitting and we're painting sloths, you know, then I will go ahead and I'll do that. I do drawing and sketching. And so there's individual time. There's also time when you can, you know, like if, for instance, you don't want to participate in something, you can stay back at the lodge and spend quiet time. Or, you know, if you decide that you don't want to be part of the group to paint, but you'd rather go paint, you know, off of the veranda at the bungalow, you can go and do that. I just like to know where you are and that you're okay. So, you know, we're pretty safety conscious that way. But it's, you know, it I think that it allows a lot of freedom. And it's almost, there's almost, I think, at times there could be an overwhelm. And I've tried to not go to so many locations. I've tried to use the Selva Verde as a hub where we stay in one place and then we splinter out to the places where we're not on the bus so long. We always have an air-conditioned bus that where you can put your art supplies and you can go back to your, you know, some people are concerned about walking. Are we going to be hiking? I have people that come with walking sticks who have limited mobility and they're fine. And if for some reason they need to sit, that's fine. So it's, I think that it's pretty easy in terms of tailoring it to you, to your physical and emotional needs. I've never had anybody overwhelmed where they just felt that they couldn't, that it was too hard for them, you know, that they couldn't walk that distance or whatever. I had one woman who was terrified of the suspension bridge, but you know what? She made it. And at the end, we got a big picture of her with a big smile, a little bit of sweat, but she did it. And I think she was really happy that she did it. And she was happy to be on the other side because we were in primary growth rainforest, which is really hard to find. So it was just that little bit of angst for a moment. And then she was happy, but then she had to go back over. But she was a trooper, so that was good.
And where can listeners go to preview the itinerary and view your photographs of your art tour?
Okay, well, it's my website, which is mindylighthype.com. And then it would be /art tours. So if you go into mindylighthype.com, there's a tab on the top, and on the top of that, it'll say that there's an art tour. And if you click on that, it's the only one right now. And I think that I changed the name. It's now called Journey to the Heart of Creativity in the Costa Rican Rainforest. So when you get to my website, it's the third one on the top. And for those who are, I know this is a podcast, so it's not visual, but I am a purple freak. I love purple. Purple's my favorite color. And so the top banner, it's where the tabs are, and it's bright purple. So it goes home, about, and then it says art tour, and then there's galleries and classes and other things that you can go and look around. I have a blog, so I encourage people to sign up for my blog because I send out instructional tutorials and stuff to, you know, try to help them along and inspire them to, you know, any little things that I find that could help them out. I like to send that out to people. Mm-hmm.
And there's room still available for the 2020 tour?
Yes, there is. We've got, I take 14 people is maximum. And right now I have two rooms left, which means I can take up to four more people. Mm-hmm. So that would be my max. So I'm looking to get, you know, four more people or two, or, you know, I do have people that like a single room. So that is possible, that if you are, you know, you don't want to share a room, there is a single room, but there are only two rooms left. And so once they're gone, it's during high season. So it's really hard to get. I actually have to book almost 2 years in advance.
Wow.
to get the rooms. And I will have to relinquish them, I believe, in early November.
I encourage listeners to read through the trip. Because if you can't make it in 2020, it's definitely something to think about for 2021.
Absolutely. I already have the dates for 2021. I tweak the itinerary every year, so it's not going to be exactly the same, but it, you know, a lot of things will be sort of similar. I think that it's interesting for people to think about it and want to go, because it is, to me, it could very well be a bucket list for people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those bucket list destinations that you want to go to. And the other thing that I can say about Costa Rica that is very impressive to me is, number one, I've been traveling there as a single woman since I was in my 30s. I went on my bicycle. I have never had any incidences. It's a country that does not have a military. It's a country that's in the forerunning of environmental consciousness. They're going wind and water power. And they also, 25% of the country, which is the size of, Costa Rica is the size of West Virginia, it is 25% of the country is national park. So they really care about it. You know, it's really interesting to me that they understand how important it is, that what they have is so fragile, and they want to preserve it for, and I think that that's another reason why I like going there and supporting it, because it has changed. Yes, there's more development there than there was before, but I think, like, for instance, they have buyback programs where they are paying farmers not to grow, or they're doing understory, like coffee and chocolate is an understory, so that you can have a rainforest and you can have a chocolate plantation underneath a primary or a secondary growth rainforest. And I think that is super, super important. And another aspect of why Costa Rica, it's an awesome place. And I have always felt safe. And the guides that I work with, they are so knowledgeable and they're so kind and enthusiastic that, you know, I would go, I do go by myself because I love it. So,
yeah. What's next for you?
Oh my goodness. That's really a good question. I think that what's next is that I'd like to focus. I just got this press. I mean, 2 days ago, I literally got my etching press 2 days ago. And I would like to see a couple of projects happen with my printmaking. Number one, printmaking makes things more affordable for people. I think that I would like to reach a market where people could afford art. And sometimes my larger paintings, because of the time that it takes me, the skill level and all of that, you know, you're talking thousands of dollars. And a lot of times people just don't have, they would love to buy it. I'm also in the bracket. I'm in the same bracket. I see work that I would love to buy. I would love to support other artists, and I cannot afford it. But printmaking allows you to do an edition that's touched by the artist. It's the artist's hand. So I've been making, like, I'm thinking about making collections of prints that could go in boxes that would be sold as sets. So for instance, I'd like to work for, like, the Toucan Rescue Ranch and document the species that they have there in my printmaking process, being able to sell them as individual prints, but also as maybe a collector's box, and also help to raise money for them so that they can keep doing the great work that they're doing. I mean, too often artists are asked to either undersell or donate their work. And in order for me to be able to continue doing what I'm doing, I need to be able to make a living. You know, like we talked about being an entrepreneur or being a self-employed person, I don't have health insurance. I don't have a 401k. I don't have paid sick days, all of that. So, you know, I have to be in a position where I need to make a living. And part of that is trying to find out how I can do that with my art, but I also want to give back. So teaching has done that. But I think that for me, teaching is solid. I feel confident as a teacher. I feel confident in leading tours. I will continue to lead tours because they make up a portion of my income. But at the same time, I think that I'd like to be able to make more art that I can get out there that also will afford me to be able to help conservation efforts that I can actually donate money to or a percentage of what I do so that I can help them and, you know, also help myself. I mean, I know that might sound, you know, strange, but I do. I need to make a living. Mm-hmm. And I can't just keep donating things to, you know, I attribute it to, if you had someone who was a car mechanic and you needed a new transmission and he was your cousin, you wouldn't go to him and say, you know, well, hey, could you put a new transmission in my car for free? Mm-hmm. You know, the answer would be no. And in some ways, I would rather pay my cousin the full price and have my cousin benefit from it than to go to somebody else and give somebody else the money. So, you know, I don't even like asking for a discount because I feel like they're working hard for it. And I feel like if you price things honestly and fairly, that's a good thing. So, you know, I'm hoping that I could put a little bit more energy into the art, but then again, there's that marketing, you know, demon that's out there. So I'm working on that now.
You will do a fine job, I am certain. I have no doubt, Mindy.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Is there anything that you'd like to say that you haven't said?
Not off the top of my head. I mean, I feel like, you know, I feel very honored that you've chosen to interview me. I've known your reputation. I think I met you out in California at a GNSI,
ASBA 2008.
ASBA.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, okay. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I met you there and, you know, I followed you through your other, mm-hmm. The Plantea. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I just feel like, you know, what you're doing is great. And I'm just really thrilled that you reached out to me. I think that's great because, you know, I think education is the future. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, there's a lot of things that are startling and concerning and people are worried and sometimes people feel hopeless or they just feel like the world is crashing in around us. And I think that education is so important. And so, you know, and just in terms of like an ending thing is that, you know, the more you learn, the more you know you need to learn. And you just have to get out there and you just got to keep doing it. So for you to be reaching out to educators, I think is great. And I think that to have a network where educators can share with one another is really super. So, you know, I actually, my closing statement is to give you like the big, you know, because I think you're doing a great job. I think it's important. And I think it's what's needed. I think we need it now. You know, we need more education and doesn't matter. It can come in very unconventional forms. And sometimes that's the best way. And so I think that you're looking at all of the different possibilities and, you know, I wish you the best in what you're doing because I think it's really important.
Thank you, Mindy. I appreciate it. Thank you. To view the 10-day itinerary for Mindy's trip to Costa Rica and to view links to resources mentioned in this episode, please visit the show notes. Also, if you would like to speak with Mindy yourself about her trip, she welcomes your email and phone calls. Thank you so much for your time and for your interest in the work of the educators and researchers featured on this podcast. To view past episodes, please visit the show's website at talaterra.com. Talaterra is a podcast for and about independent educators working in natural resource fields and environmental education. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with friends and colleagues. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Tanya Marion.